This Week in Radio Tech is supported by Telos Audio Networks. Telos, the best way to hear from there. On the web at telos-systems.com. And by Violet Microphones at violetusa.com.
And now, our feature presentation,
TWiT.
We asked TWiT Network President Dane Golden what he thought of TWiT Episode 20.
A fantastic show, guys.
All right, calm down. He says that to everyone.
This calls for immediate discussion.
What's your name?
I have all your data belong to us.
From his palatial office of important business.
Or in a choice hotel in a distant land.
This is Kirk Harnack.
Over Hill, Over Dale, it's another War Stories episode with Tom Ray, Chris Tobin, and Chris Tarr.
You're dialed in to This Week in Radio Tech.
Now, everybody's saying right now already in the chat room, and you know we'll have a chat going always when you do the show at irc.twit.tv. What the heck is that microphone? In fact, they want to know everybody's microphone. I mean, it's appropriate in This Week in Radio Tech, right?
Yeah. This one, actually, I commandeered. I actually paid for it. I did get a discount, but I paid for it. I got this from a guy named Slava, and I'm not sure I can pronounce his last name, like Rubinstick or something like
it
this.
It looks like a blue
He's
mic.
From Estonia. What's that?
It looks like a blue mic. It's not a blue mic?
It does look like a blue. It's actually a company called Violet, which is familially related to blue. There was an argument or something that cousins or brothers don't like each other.
Interesting.
Of course, Violet claims to be the keeper of the true tradition of condenser microphones. And, you know, blue has a much better marketing arm in the U.S. So you'll see a lot of blue microphones in the U.S. I just was watching the, you know, the latest Star Trek movie. When Kirk and Spock appear before before Tyler Perry,
right,
and on the council there, and they all have blue microphones.
They have blue mics. I know, so futuristic.
Yeah, they could have been Violets, but I think they're anyway. This is a Violet. It's a condenser mic, as all their microphones are, and they're kind of spendy. They're pricey. The idea though is they have very large gold sputtered condenser plates on them, and the company they're the people who used to rebuild Neumann microphones
wow.
for the German Neumann company are the same people who now make these microphones, or their sons and daughters, or
wow.
grandsons and granddaughters.
Well, and of course, so fittingly, you guys have all of your guests, and I'm going to let you get going here in a second, but look great. The Skype quality you're getting is fantastic, and it's great. I mean, this show is going to be wonderful. It's going to be one of our best-looking shows, and none of you are in studio.
well, thanks. You know, I took a cue from you. I put on some of my wife's makeup.
I do that. I put your wife's makeup on all the time. So, Kirk Harnack and This Week in Radio Tech, we're really glad to have you part of the TWiT family. This show will be on at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, every Wednesday on the TWiT Network. Everybody's going to be writing down notes here because we're going to be learning a lot from the show. So if you're ready, Jam, or B,
well,
he wants to get
Kirk.
To...
We want to hear from Tom.
He wants to get levels
Chris and
from
Chris
everybody.
Make sure they can all hear us.
So I'll let you do this.
Yeah, all the co-hosts are here, so let's get their levels, hey. And then we'll get going. Thanks for the nice introduction, Leo.
Have a great show. See you later, guys. I'll be listening.
Hi there, and good evening or good morning, wherever you are. I'm Kirk Harnack, and this is This Week in Radio Tech. It's the show about radio technology, audio, RF technology, streaming, audio processing, getting decent quality and sometimes even really good quality audio from here to there, wherever here and there might be. You know, it used to be that show about playing records in 45s and making sure that the stylus was clean on the Shure cartridge, but it's not so much anymore. Joining me and the guys who really make the show interesting are my co-hosts, and let's do the usual round robin. We'll start out in just outside of New York City with Mr. Tom Ray III. Hi, Tom.
Hey, good evening, Kirk. I brought my eye bleach.
What's that Jeez. For?
You know?
Jeez. Tom, let's give your quick elevator spiel. You work for the folks at Buckley Broadcasting and WOR in New York, right?
Yes, sir. I'm the VP Director of Engineering of Buckley Broadcasting. I am out of WOR in New York, and some people say I'm out of my mind, but here I am, and we expect a good show tonight.
Tell us where you're broadcasting from. Tell us about the room you're in.
Well, this is what we call my room. It's down downstairs in the house, and this is kind of like my lair where I have my my little computer farm and my ham radio stuff, which is behind me. So this is my my domicile, my place.
Some people were asking in the chat room if the show was about ham radio, and I said, well, we do have four ham radio operators on the show, although the show's not about ham radio. When we get a chance to check the chat room, and if you're in the chat room, give us a little break. Give us a little easement here because I have too many things on my screen right now. This is a little more complicated than our usual show. Let's move on to another location in New York, this time in Manhattan. It's Chris Tobin with CBS Radio. Hey, Chris.
Hello, Kirk. Tom, how are you tonight?
Very good.
We're good. We're good. Tell us about where you are and why is the microphone behind you, Chris?
Well, that's just a prop. It's television. You know, you got to do something for visual. The microphone I'm using is actually a SM7, a Shure SM7. And I'm broadcasting from my special broadcast house office here at my home. So it's high atop of the city, and it's really nice.
Well, good. Thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. And Chris Tobin's the guy that adds a little New York City class since he's responsible for so many of the CBS properties in New York. And speaking of class, the other Chris, Mr. Tarr, the Ninjaneer from Milwaukee. Hey, Chris, are you there?
Hey there, Kirk. Yeah, I'm the guy who kind of erases all the class that you guys start out with.
You and me both, Chris.
Chris, show us your T-shirt there.
Okay, let me stand up a little bit. There we go. Yeah, Ninjaneer. There you go.
Chris Tarr, the Ninjaneer. In fact, Chris, we had to make sure before the end of the show that we give out everyone's URL. Chris Tarr runs a couple of interesting websites. And in fact, one of them we'll reference here in the show. Chris, I forgot to mention, you work for the folks at Entercom in Milwaukee and take care of how many stations around there?
I have three radio stations in Milwaukee and three radio stations in Madison, Wisconsin.
All right. So six all together. All right. And Tom takes care, as we mentioned, takes care of WOR in New York. I met Tom a long time ago. Tom, you may have been the chairman of the SBE, Society of Broadcast Engineers chapter in New York City when I first met you. Does that ring a bell?
I think I might have been, Kirk. I'm still the chairman of SBE 15 in New York, and we worked together putting in the Axia system at WOR in New York. We've known each other quite a while and quite a long time, and have a very good relationship, as we do with all the guys on the show.
All right. Well, enough about us. We have a war stories episode tonight. Every 10th episode, we talk about war stories. There's four Skype sources at the Twit Network, so we only have room for four people to be on. So we thought for our first video cast, we'd go ahead and get all four of the co-hosts on the air. Myself, Tom.
Uh-oh.
Oh no!
We seem to have a frozen.
Kirk, come back! Come back! We need you.
I think what he was saying was we are going to have the four of us on for the first show, and on rotating basis, some of us will just kind of not be here, but we'll be on the audio portion and possibly on the phone or possibly just on the mic. So while we're trying to figure out where Kirk went, because Kirk has seemed to left the building, much like Elvis, why don't we start out with some war stories, and maybe we'll toss it out to Wisconsin and Chris Tarr. Chris, why don't you start us off, and Kirk can join us when he's ready.
Oh, there's Kirk right there. Hey, Kirk.
There you. Hey, Kirk, you back?
Yeah, I don't know. You know, daughter's in the other room. She's probably uploading a new video to YouTube, so yeah, sorry.
BitTorrent.
I'll see if I can go put an end to that. But let's go to Chris Tarr. You've got a war story to tell us. And by the way, I wanted to mention this before we got completely started in the war stories. I wanted to look up the definition of a war story. All right, so we all have this in our head. This is what we're going for. It's a recounting of a memorable experience, especially one involving challenge, hardship, danger, or other interesting features. So every story must qualify. All right. No disappointments now. And I'm sure Chris won't. Chris, go ahead.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say for the people who are talking about my microphone on the IRC channel, it's a Shure SM5. Yes, it's a big torpedo. Yes, you can hear things from space with it. And it's a huge monster built like a tank. You can hammer nails with this sucker. It's great. Anyway, I guess my first go around with the war stories here actually happened about a month and a half ago. We were cleaning my transmitter building in Milwaukee, and my assistant turned on the vacuum. And the minute he felt so bad for him, the minute he turned on the vacuum, it actually the vacuum had so much horsepower that the fluctuation in current burned up a relay in the high power supply for the transmitter.
Oh, do I have a picture of this? Did you send me a photo of this?
No, that's not the picture of that one. That'll be later on. That's a better story.
Okay, I want to.
That's a later story. I've been for some reason recently. I've just had transmitters blowing up left and right. But the look on his face as he turned this vacuum cleaner on, and you hear this huge clunk, and the transmitter shuts down. And we were just scrambling, you know, put the backup transmitter on, and I finally put out the edict that you can no longer use the vacuum in the transmitter building because it just it destroyed our transmitter. That's the first go around on that one.
Do we really want to know how big that motor was?
Well, that's why I was wondering how many horsepower this vacuum cleaner had. I mean, you turn it on and the lights dim, and you know, I think you probably could have sucked the chrome off a trailer hitch with that thing.
So that was a Hoover failure, a Hoover-induced failure.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, you know, that's not a terribly uncommon thing. I've heard other stories of both at tech centers, you know, like IT tech centers, and at radio stations where the cleaning crew will plug the vacuum cleaner into an outlet that happens to be on a UPS or some other circuit that really is current limited.
I have our studio for our top 40 station, the night guy thought it'd be really cool to microwave eggs as a little bit on the air. So he put the microwave in the studio, plugged it into the strip that powered all of the equipment, and threw the eggs in the microwave and turned it on for 30 seconds. Well, 15 minutes later, after we got the studio switched over, the current draw just, caused a lot of problems with the equipment. I'll tell you, it's a mistake that probably won't be making again.
For our listeners who are either radio engineers or not radio engineers, what's the takeaway from the story of plugging in something like a vacuum cleaner that does suck a lot of current?
Oh, it sure does suck. No, the takeaway is never clean anything. I just let everything get dirty. the takeaway is obviously be careful where you plug in your equipment, and have separate circuits for that stuff. Keep your critical stuff on one circuit and your service circuit on, separate, and use the service circuit for things like vacuum cleaners. And if you're going to microwave eggs on the radio, another good tip.
Okay. All right. Yeah, do be careful. All right. Who is next? Who has another war story for us? I think Mr. Tobin would. Did you have something to say?
It involves a winter storm, transmitter site, a tower, and St. Elmo's fire, I think is what they used to call it. I received a phone call one night around 2 a.m., snowstorm rolling in, flakes everywhere. And I got a phone call from the local police department telling me, we're getting numerous phone calls. Your transmitter site's on fire. I'm like, wow, great. Just what I want to hear at 2 a.m. with 6 inches of snow on the ground. So I quickly go to the radio, tune in, and both my AM and FM stations are indeed on the air. And I call the studio hotlines, and they're telling me, no, everything's fine. I said, can you look at the remote control temperature of the transmitter room? Normal, 60 degrees. I said, all right, on my way. More calls coming in. Police department. Now the fire department's on their way out. They're about to break down the door, kill the power to the site. And I'm like, guys, what's going on? I get there. The AM tower, nice 5/8 wave, 475-foot tower at 1,000 watts. The guy wires, the snow, the dry air, and sparks along the guy wires. Literally, you look up, and there's a corona. You get the corona and the flakes sparking. And then I have the fire department at the base of the tower about to start chopping at my inch and 5/8 cable and these huge isocouplers we have. They're the long tubes for isocoupling the tower, and just it was out of control. I'm racing to stop them before they're about to cause more sparks that would really cause problems. But that was the best. And then the neighbors the next day, it was just
Is there a difference between what you call corona and St. Elmo's fire, or is that the same sort of thing?
It was about the same thing. I was just trying to give a description for those who may be familiar with one or the other. But I wish I had a camera. I didn't expect that at all. I'm expecting someone in the back of the field, lighting magazines, starting a small fire to keep warm because the kids are out having, drinking fest. No, my AM tower, combination AM-FM tower, is sparking along the entire length, up and down, 475 feet. It was great.
Wow.
And every public service agency in town was there.
let's give our listeners and viewers a little bit of a takeaway. You mentioned something called an isocoupler, and that's a new word to a lot of people. What does an isocoupler do, and why is it important to a broadcast engineer?
Isocoupler, in the simplest terms, is a transformer. Just like the little wall wart, the little cubes that you have on some of your consumer products or broadcast professional products. It's essentially the ability to couple an FM signal, a VHF signal, say like two-way radio, or power to a tower that is hot. Hot tower meaning AM tower, which is series fed. So you have an AM, the physical tower, that entire 450 feet in this case, or larger depending on what you're doing, is energized. So in order to put anything on it without grounding and shorting it, you do an isocoupler. So if you can picture, take two paper clips, put them horizontally, side by side, separated by about, you know, an eighth of an inch of space, wires on either end, that's an isocoupler. Put it in a canister, you know, and you got a transformer.
So just to make sure I got this clear, which I think I do, but our listeners do too, with an AM tower, usually the whole AM tower is the antenna. The structure is the antenna, and the whole thing radiates signal, and the whole thing is hot with signal. And most AM towers are what we call quarter wave or half wave, and they're series fed. That is, they're hot at the bottom, and they have an insulator at the bottom to insulate the bottom of the steel structure from the ground. And if we want to mount other antennas on that structure, like an FM transmission antenna or two-way radio antennas or even cellular antennas for a cell base station, we can't just take a piece of coax and run it from the transmitter building and attach it to the tower and go up the tower, because that will effectively ground the tower, and then the AM station will no longer work. So we have to have a way to isolate and couple, hence the great name isocoupler, isolate these coaxes. We're actually breaking the coax for the FM antenna with the isocoupler, and yet we're getting the signal across this break, because it's almost like two little antennas pointing at each other inside the isocoupler. Did I get that fairly right?
Yes, that's correct. Some AM towers that are fed in a different manner, that the tower is grounded. And there are wires along the length of the tower that act as an antenna. Those are known as skirts, or other term, a unipole. But that, you know, that's neither here nor there. They're around. But primarily, most AM towers are insulated from the ground and are series fed.
Gotcha. All right. Well, thanks. All right, Mr. Ray, we're on over to you. Would you have a war story for us this evening, please?
Oh, I sure do. But before we do that, I just wanted to mention you had called the AM antenna or the AM tower a structure before. And depends on the state you're in New Jersey, an AM tower is not considered a structure because it is considered equipment for tax purposes. Therefore, it's not subject to the personal property tax.
Because
it doesn't hold anything. An FM tower holds the FM antenna. Therefore, it is a structure and it is taxable. So there is a distinction to be made there.
See, in Wisconsin, we call it something we climb after we go drinking.
Oh, well, that too. There had to be some
lobbying involved with those differentiations of terms for tax purposes.
There have been, and we fought one when I worked in Connecticut a number of years ago. We fought that and got that put through in the Connecticut legislature. But in New Jersey, this happened a while back, and even though it's on the books in the legislature, sometimes depends on the assessor in the town, depends on how hard you have to fight with them. When we just built our new site, it wasn't an issue because Rutherford's right next door to Lyndhurst, where a bunch of towers are, not a problem. It was a known quantity, but some places you kind of have to knock on the door and let people know. My first story, isn't really directly broadcast related, but it's kind of incidental off to the side. Many moons ago, when I was a young tyke, I worked for the Hartford Whalers hockey team, which are now the Carolina Hurricanes. And I worked with Chuck Caton, who's one of the he's a member now of the Hockey Hall of Fame as the announcer. And in 1978, June 18th, 1978, the roof of the Hartford Civic Center fell in, and the Hartford Whalers looked for some place to play. Well, they went 25 miles up the road to Springfield, Massachusetts, in the Springfield Civic Center. Hey, not a problem. Being 19 years old, working Saturday night, single guy, had nothing really, honest to God, nothing to do this one night. So I showed up. I must have shown up at the Springfield Civic Center at 3:30 in the afternoon. I mean, I literally had nothing to do. And Chuck was in the process. His wife was in Wisconsin selling the house, and she had the kids, and she was not there, and he had nothing to do. So I show up at 3:30. He shows up at 3:35. Well, we get set up. We used to run the spots and stuff on site. And up in Springfield, up at the top, there was a table and a tabletop, and that was press row. So we set up, and we're sitting there, and we're looking at each other, and Chuck said, gee, I have this interview to do. Well, the guy blows him off. Now we have nothing to do. So we're kind of sitting there looking at each other, and we looked, and the control booth for the Springfield Civic Center was just off to our left. And he says, you know, let's walk in there and see what they got. So we walked in, and we take a look, and there's this thing, looks like an old telex teletype. What it was is it controlled the message board, and in those days, the message boards were, you know, simple little one-line device. Didn't do much except put some words up on top of the scoreboard. So we're standing there looking at it. Chuck says, you know how to use this? And, well, I don't know. So we proceeded to sit there and type. And at the time, Gordie Howe, and if you don't know who Gordie Howe is, Gordie Howe, up until I think it was Wayne Gretzky broke his record, had the all-time scoring record in the NHL with 300 goals, you know, career goals. And great guy, real nice guy. So we look at the message board thing, and there's this little single line on it for, you know, it's an alphanumeric display. So I type in Gordie Howe sucks and hit the enter button. and we look up at the message board, nothing there. And we look down at this little teletype, and the little display says Gordie with a question mark, like it's asking, is it Gordie? Huh. Gordie Howe sucks. We hit enter again. We look at the message board, nothing. And we look down, and it says Howe sucks with a question mark. And it's like, okay, Gordie Howe sucks, and hit enter again. Nothing. So, of course, we got bored and went to find something else to do. Well, between first and second period, the first, second period intermission comes up, and that was where Chuck's interview was supposed to be. So he and the color guy are shooting the breeze. I have nothing to do for 10 minutes. I'm sitting there, you know, girl watching. And, you know, the Zamboni's out clearing the ice, and they're playing music, and the message board's going, and the message board says, you know, Chicago in concert. In those days, they had roller derby coming up. And then all of a sudden, it couldn't be stationary. Oh, no. No, it had to flash. Gordie Howe sucks.
Excellent.
The crowd goes nuts. Chuck's kind of looking around. I grab his head and turn it towards the message board, and that was only the one of two times in the 10 years we worked together that I ever saw his jaw hit the table, and he was speechless. And these two guys in the center come screaming up the stairs, and they come over. You guys see anybody up here? Oh, no, we... preparing, getting. Oh, are you sure? I haven't seen anybody. We went down for supper, but like, oh my god!
Oh, the trouble you can get into with Tom Ray.
Oh, big time!
Gee-man-y. All right, is it my turn?
You bet it is.
All right, boy, it was. Well, it was a dark and stormy night. It was 1994. In fact, it was about February the 8th or so of 1994, and a big ice storm came through the south of the U.S., and it dumped all kinds of ice in Arkansas and Mississippi and northern Alabama and up into Tennessee. And at the time, I owned, and it's now realized I still and part owner of some radio stations there. I'm part owner. I own the part that doesn't make any money. And at the time, I was living in Memphis, and I was a contract engineer for several stations in the Memphis area. And we had plenty of ice there, too. In fact, the first day after the ice storm, there was literally 2 to 4 inches of ice on the roads. So there was almost nobody traveling on the highway. So I was in Memphis, and I had a transmitter site. This was the station was Rock 98 at the time. I forget the call letters, but to get there, you had to drive up I-55 from Memphis toward St. Louis, and you got off at Frenchman's Bayou, Arkansas. Well, we had, must have been a 900-foot tower there with a 20-kilowatt continental transmitter and about a 10 or 12 bay, I think it was a 12 bay FM antenna. It was a Shively antenna. And this Shively did okay in the ice, but I don't think we spent the money for the de-icers for it, you know, the electric de-icers. And I
It may have had radomes, but I just don't recall. But there was plenty of ice, so much so that the tower, it was amazing it was still standing because it had plenty of radial of ice on the tower members. So I had the drive of this place because it kept shutting on and off, and I was pretty sure commercial power was out, but we had a big generator out there. So anyway, I drive there, and I'm driving in my trusty Nissan 300ZX, which was my engineering work car. The thing would hold a ton in the back of it. And I'm driving up I-55 through northeastern Arkansas, and there's almost nobody on the road. There's tractor trailers jackknifed on either side, but there's almost nobody on the road. So I really don't have a whole lot of trouble making it up to Frenchman's Bayou, despite the fact that the road was literally a sheet of ice. Until I was on the straight road, now on a state road, to a place where you have to slow down and actually make a left turn to get to the transmitter site. And I realized that I might have trouble stopping. So I'm not going but 25 or 30 miles an hour. So I apply the brakes gently, and the car doesn't do anything. It just keeps going straight. And I apply the brakes a little more, and the car keeps going straight. And I pump the brakes a little bit, the car just keeps going straight. So eventually, I put the car in neutral and apply what I know has got to be some brakes. And I just slide for a mile. It must have been every bit of a mile. And finally, I came to a stop not far from a guy who was stopped in the middle of the road. Well, okay. Back up, go to the transmitter site, and I get there, and there are chunks of ice falling off the tower. And this is really dangerous, and I should have been a little smarter than this, but I'd never experienced this before. A chunk of ice hits me in the back. Now, this ice has fallen from probably 600 to 800 feet up, so it's going, you know, all about terminal velocity by this point. So that hurt. And I ended up finding out that the diesel fuel in the day tank was getting gelled. Actually, it was the line going to the day tank. I'm not sure what I did. Somehow I got some heat out there to it. I don't think I took a torch to the line to the day tank, but somehow I got the fuel warmed up that was in this line. It was congealed and got the generator going again, and got the transmitter okay. Actually, the radomes, as I recall, actually kind of did their job and kept the ice away from the antenna proper. And so we were back on the air. Well, then I have to go down to Mississippi to take care of the stations there that are off the air. Well, it turns out the farther I drove into Mississippi to get to Cleveland, Mississippi, where my radio stations were, the farther that I go down there, the worse the ice storm had been. And got to a point by the time I got to about Clarksdale, Mississippi, which is called Cahoma County, there wasn't anything higher than 30 feet standing. All the high voltage transmission lines that went cross country, and in that part of the world, they were the double wooden poles. They didn't have, they did have some steel ones, and they were down too. There wasn't anything above 30 feet standing. So, the tall, transmission line poles that are next to a highway, those were all snapped off and broken just for miles. And then the cross country ones that are two poles and some cross arms, and they're three phase. Those were all down. And I got to the radio station, and our tower at the time was right next door to the Kroger in Cleveland, Mississippi. And our tower was apparently one of the only ones standing in the area. And this tower was 325 feet tall or 340 feet tall. It was a Class A FM. So it was, the center of radiation of the antenna was 100 meters. And the tower was bent like an S. And it was absolutely, and one of the guy wires was broken. It was absolutely amazing that this thing was not fallen over into the produce section of the Kroger, but it wasn't. And somebody had brought us a little Honda generator. And so all we could do was put the exciter, the FM exciter, into the antenna, happened to have the right adapters, and got it in there. So we were on the air on, 20 watts or something like this into an 8-bay circular antenna. So that would have a gain of about 4.3. So we were on the air with 80 watts or so. And then at the studio, we had borrowed a couple generators to keep the studio gear going. So for 12 days, our studio and our transmitter site had no power. And in fact, there were little communities in the area hit by the ice storm in that part of Mississippi, northern Mississippi, where they didn't have power for 30 days. That's how bad the damage was. They didn't have enough power to restart the power generating station in Cleveland, Mississippi. I don't know what they did. They had to bring some generators in to restart the power plant there. They have a, I guess, an oil-fired power plant. So anyway, the what's the uptake of the engineering? Well, the engineering was, you know, seeing what we could do to shed power, just run the things we had to so the generators could run. And then at the transmitter site, we went through several generators before we finally got a decent one from the Army National Guard. They brought us a quite a decent three-phase generator to use for several days until the commercial power got back on. But man, what a work and, you know, putting life and limb in danger and driving. It was a four-hour drive. No, it was a five-hour drive from the Frenchman's Bayou site down to Cleveland, Mississippi. And it was exciting, but we stayed on the air, and all the other stations in the area were off the air. Their towers were down or they had no power. And so in a little area like that, Arbitron does just an annual survey. They don't do twice a year or four times a year or continuous. They just do a once a year survey of the listenership. And that year, our station had a 45 share of the listening audience.
Nice.
Must have been very nice. And, when they were surveying, huh?
Yeah, we were the only station that people could think of.
That's
and
funny.
What was interesting, we were a country station in an area that was about 65% black population. So, you know, the R&B and hip hop stations tended to do very well in that area. And the country station, you know, we got our listeners, and we had listeners of you know, both races that lived there, white and black. But it was just amazing that we had a 45 share, which would be completely unheard of in that part of the country for either an urban oriented station or a country station. But we did. It was just absolutely amazing. And that, you know, allowed us to sell ads for several years until, you know, people figured out that we really didn't have a 45 share anymore. So there you go. There's my little war story.
Excellent. That's a nice
one. Well, Mr. Tarr, you sent along some pictures. Is there any story you've got to tell about those?
I did. Well, this is a transmitter site in Baraboo, Wisconsin, which is our Madison market. The transmitter is a Continental 816 R2B, and we got a call one night about 3 a.m. that the transmitter was off the air. And so what happened was got in the car, went out there, and I'm on the phone with my assistant who got there first. And I said, okay, turn on the transmitter and tell me what's going on. And I hear, you know, the buttons clicking, and all of a sudden I hear him go, I smell smoke. Okay, turn it off, you know, turn it off. You know, we're going to hang on for a second. So we put the backup transmitter on, which is a late 1960s AEL 20KB transmitter. And they don't make them anymore. AEL's been out of business for 30 years. And we have the only transmitter of this type in existence anymore. So
I can't see this screen and the other one at the same time, Chris, but I am showing on my screen for GoToMeeting for the studio the AEL transmitter you're talking about.
Yes, I see it.
Yep. Okay, good. And if you want me putting those other pictures on there, just cue me because I can't see Skype and this at the same time.
Okay, no problem. So that is the AEL transmitter, the backup transmitter. So we turn that on. And, you know, generally we haven't had any problems with the Continental. So the AEL hasn't run a whole lot, but we put it on for an hour or two. So we turn that transmitter on. And about 3.5 hours in, we get to start working on the Continental and it dies. The AEL dies. So now we've got nothing. So we're scrambling, and we take the little adapter that I have, an N adapter to 3-inch adapter, and there's a graphic of that. And I get the exciter on the air, and the tower's up at about 1,500 feet on a bluff, a 5-bay antenna. So 50 watts gives us pretty good coverage. And we start to work on the transmitters. Well, we take apart the Continental after it smoked, and we found out that there's a variac that controls the filament voltage. And that started to burn up, and there's a picture of that.
Yeah, wait a minute. Let's see. Here's the variac.
Yeah. Well, that's your problem right there.
There's your problem right there.
There's where you smoke right there.
Nice coloring.
Yeah. Well, you know, we paid extra for that. So, yeah, that was the problem. That's what started smoking. So in the process, it also took out some relays. So we're scrambling and, you know, we have a backup transmitter that's dead. We have a main transmitter that's dead. All that we have is a 50 watt exciter to get us back on the air. So we start ordering parts.
What's that? Oh, the 50 watt exciter, that would be in the Continental.
Correct. Right. We just put that directly to the antenna. And I happen to remember that a friend of mine had a 600 watt FM power amplifier, a PTEC amplifier. There's a picture of that too. And so I ran down, drove to Chicago, picked it up, brought it back. and quickly got that on the air. And that's what we were on for 2 days while we're making these repairs, is that 600 watt amplifier. So we're going through all this work, and eventually, we replace the relays, which there's a picture of that too, I think, with the relays dangling down. Oh, replace the variac. We replace the,
wait a minute. There it is right there.
There it is. So we've got the relays were replaced, that variac. We stayed on the air the entire time. We got rid of the AEL. There's a picture, I believe, of our new backup transmitter at that site, which is a Nautel, V2 transmitter, which we bought to replace the AEL. That's where I was putting it in. So we've got a reliable transmitter now. But what I really thought was interesting about this whole project, we got it back on the air and everything was fine. But there was me, my assistant, and a guy from Madison called Richwood, who's a really good engineer, real good guy. It was, the whole time, we put our heads together, we kept our cool. And, there are some situations where we could see, because of the fact we didn't have any parts or anything, that we could have been off the air or greatly reduced power for days. And instead, we all put our heads together and came up with a plan and calmly got everything in motion. And even while we were repairing this, I was working on getting a new backup transmitter. My company, very fortunately, said, yeah, do what you need to do. But it was a really good example of a bunch of people getting together problem solving to, fix this sort of a problem. So the end result was transmitters back on the air with new parts. We have a backup transmitter now that's in good shape. And a real good learning experience. And that's the final picture. That was when we turned on the plate on button and the transmitter went up to 100%. I'll tell you, there's nothing better than that feeling after you have a transmitter.
Yeah. And
you put it all back together.
So true.
And press that button.
Describe how those Continental transmitters come up to power. They don't just whang and they're at full power. They do something.
No, they creep up slow. And, so you kind of hold your fingers going, come on. And nothing like that feeling when those transmitters come up at full power. But it was a great experience. And, it's things like that that really, as an engineer, kind of get your juices going when you have something like that happen. Those emergencies and those off-air things, and you rush into action and get it done. It's a great feeling. And I really enjoyed doing it. It was a great project.
Just thinking again about the Nautel transmitter, and I was reminded about really a Nautel has basically some of the world's largest light dimmers for the that are available to ordinary people to control the power, and that's a bit unusual for a transmitter. Continental uses this technique of putting SCR, silicon controlled rectifiers, which is what a light dimmer is that you might have in your wall switch, but they use enormous ones to control the primary voltage that feeds a multiple phase or like a three phase transformer. Now, right? Am I recalling correctly?
That's how they're designed.
Yes, you are. Yes, yes.
Okay. Definitely. Okay. And when you take them off of full power, they buzz. Because they're yes, really they're making yeah. square waves and kind of shaking
kinda
the
scary,
transformer
actually.
Wow. All right. Well, Chris, thanks for that story. Mr. Tobin, we got time for a quick one from you and one more from Tom Ray.
All right. Fair enough. Hey, this one's a great one. routine maintenance, Sunday night, Monday morning type thing around 1 a.m. And a friend of mine and I are working on his transmitter. We always work with two people, never do it by yourself. And we're cleaning it out, changing the tube, vacuuming, wiping down the high voltage wires from all the wonderful dirt that it picks up. And you do the old shorting stick to make sure that everything is discharged. Well, Harris in this particular transmitter decides to have two shorting sticks, not one that you typically have in Continental or some other models, but two. So neither of us decided to say, hey, did you check both sticks? We just said, hey, is the stick out of the transmitter? Yes, it is. Great. Time now is roughly 3:30 in the morning. Morning drive in the New York City radio station is about an hour and a half away. Big show coming up, the usual morning show event. Close up the transmitter, plates on. Blue spark comes out past my face, out the front of the transmitter. That meter you talk about that went this way and we went that way, from 100% to zero. So the two of us look at each other going, wow, we've got a problem, because the backup transmitter, which we had there, was unfortunately taken offline due to a failed or shorted transformer, not charred or discolored like Chris's was, but shorted, which means no power comes out. So yeah. We're sitting there quickly trying to think what to do, because here's the conundrum. At 5:30, the morning show starts. At 6:30, 7 a.m., a music group shows up to do an interview on the morning show. Why not? You like to do those kinds of things. Yeah, that morning show music group was U2. Maybe you heard of the group? Maybe you heard of the lead singer, Bono. Maybe. So there's the two of us, 3:30 in the morning at a transmitter site on top of a building, saying to ourselves, wow, how do we handle this? So we, you know, creatively found a way to work around the step start system, the real resistors and relays, and we made the transmitter come back up at full power at approximately 4:50 a.m. Morning show, the PD calls up. Hey, how are you guys doing up there? You still at the transmitter? They say the remote control's in maintenance bypass. Is everything okay? Of course, poker face. In this case, a telephone voice. We're great to go. Everything's good. We're online. So we figured we'd stay up there at the transmitter for morning drive. That was a great one. But, you know, it's a great feeling to blow up your transmitter with a big show coming up. And you sit there going, wow, let's go to the backup. Ooh, can't do that today. Yeah, so that was the first story.
Ouch. Man.
It was just U2, Bono. They were just starting out. You know, who knew?
Well, Mr. Ray, from your lair of RF, what you got for us?
Well, I have a friend who used to own a radio station down in St. Thomas, and I went down, I was taking care of things for him, and he had this, it was kind of a dog of an AM transmitter, and we had talked about replacing the transmitter, but he really wanted to give this transmitter one more chance. So, okay. So I went down and had a problem, and I'm sitting there with the operations manager, and I'm sitting in front of the transmitter. What's the first thing you do? You measure the line voltage coming in. And down there, the line voltage is very unpredictable. And I'm sure, Kirk, you've probably seen this on over in American Samoa where your stations are. The line voltage at times is probably very unpredictable. Mm-hmm. It's not like it is here in New York. Yep. So I get out the voltmeter. Station had a very good voltmeter. I think it was a Fluke 80. And notice I said was. And I'm sitting there, you know, the operations manager is sitting next to me. We're sitting on milk crates, and I'm sitting there, you know, with the probes and, we're going to go look at the voltage, set the thing for AC voltage, set it up on the 400 volt scale. And I'll this is 208 three phase, for me, low voltage because, you know, I work with 480 and we're shooting the bull just like I'm talking right now. And I touched the probes to the input terminals. And apparently the meter had an internal short, unbeknownst to me or anyone else. And it was sitting on the floor. It just went boom and rose and went about over my head and ended up in the corner. I think the operations director was like right now clutching the ceiling grid. And I'm looking at him and I just said, okay, well, that's what happens when the meter shorted. Let's go out and get mine. You know, and I just kept going. Oh, the poor guy. I don't think he ever went near that transmitter again.
Yikes. Well, did you get the problem fixed eventually?
We replaced the transmitter. That really fixed the problem.
Oh, yeah.
I thought you were going to say you replaced the operations guy.
No, we had to, you know, send him home for a change of clothes, but, you know.
Oh, man.
Oh, nice. Gosh.
Wow. I got one more little quick one for you. This happened very early in my engineering career when I was really stupid. People ask me, well, what kind of electronics training do you have, Kirk? And I say, well, actually, I don't have any formal electronics training. I've just been enough times to where I know where all the electrons hang out. And that's kind of true. Early in my career, I was 18 years old, and I somehow became, I worked at a radio station that was so small. In fact, it was WKXO in Berea, Kentucky.
How small was
the station? What's that?
How small
was the station?
It
was so small that the manager went on vacation, and while he was on vacation, some things went wrong business-wise, and the owner who worked in the office above the radio station, the owner fired the general manager while he was gone on vacation, and the station was so small that I general manager.
Oh, Lord.
Now that's a radio story.
So, now, funny. The general manager that he fired was also the engineer. And so I became the engineer. Now, luckily, I had put batteries in a flashlight before, so I knew something about electronics at the time. So anyway, after a few months went by, we had a, and actually we actually did okay in sales. We tripled the billing from like 3,000 a month to 9,000 a month. We did that in about 4 months. And so the owner was thinking, hey, that's Kirk's pretty good little manager here. Well, one day the transmitter went off the air during a rainstorm. And so I went out to the transmitter site, opened the door to find the transmitter was on fire.
That's a good reason for it to be off.
The transmitter was a Gates BC250GY. I should try to find put a link to that in the show notes so that people can see what this thing is.
A G250 what?
It was a Gates BC250GY.
Oh man, I never heard of that one before.
Yeah. I don't know how many of those they built. It had the output tubes were, I want to say, were the 830s? I think so. And it had some 804 tubes in it. Well, what was on fire was this piece of Bakelite inside. The water had dripped in. Apparently, the transmitter building had a leak in the roof, and water dripped in during the rainstorm, and it got inside the transmitter and shorted something out, which caught on fire. So I go in the building, and this must have been 1980 or 81. We had no fire extinguisher in there. I mean, heck, there were weeds as tall as me on the way to the building.
We don't need no stinking fire extinguisher.
So the transmitter was on fire, and I'm thinking, well, what do I do? There's no fire extinguisher, and the building was just full of acrid smoke. So I thought, this fire's not really flaming heavy. You know, it was just Bakelite that was on fire, so it wasn't like a hot fire. So I went outside, and I took a deep breath, and I ran inside and opened the back door to the transmitter, and I went.
And put the fire out.
So the fire was out. And after that, I think I just turned the power off, took some rags, wiped up the water, and made sure everything was nice and dry. I may have gone home and got a hair dryer and took the hair dryer to it and dried it all off, turned it back on, came right on. No problem. We were on the air the next morning.
So, love it. Did you go out and get a package of marshmallows too to go with it, Kirk?
With the acrid smoke, you know, it was nasty. It was nasty smoke. I'm sure I caught something from that. So, all right, gentlemen, this is going to wrap up a War Stories edition. I'm not sure exactly what time we started, so we're going to wrap it up about now. It's been a little bit under an hour. I sure want to thank each of you for joining us. Listeners, thank you for bearing with us. And if you're watching us live, thanks very, very much. The website for the podcast and for the show notes is thisweekinradiotech.com. It's all spelled out, thisweekinradiotech.com. If you enjoyed the video version of the podcast and you'd like to download the audio once a week, you can subscribe to it at iTunes. Just do a search in the iTunes store for TWIRT, T-W-I-R-T. There's a couple of them there. I think ours is pretty obvious, and so you can subscribe to that. There's also an RSS feed button on the homepage of the website, thisweekinradiotech.com. So if you do the RSS thing, if that's the way you subscribe to new episodes, you can certainly do it that way as well. Also on the website, you can leave comments about this episode as soon as I get it posted. You can also leave general comments in the Speak Up forum. You can make suggestions for things for us to talk about, guests for us to have on the show, and things that you'd like to get answered. Maybe next week I'll be able to be more multitasking and watch the chat room at the same time as I'm talking. Thanks for bearing with us for our very first episode on the TWIT Network. Sure appreciate your being here. I want to thank my co-host, Tom Ray from New York. Thanks for being along with us.
Anytime, Kirk. Thanks for having me in.
Chris Tobin in Manhattan. Thank you for being here, too. Appreciate you.
Absolutely my pleasure.
And Chris Tarr from the even colder and frozener tundras of Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
It has been a blast, Kirk.
Your website, Chris Tarr?
GeekJedi.com. GeekJedi.com.
And I suppose there's a link there to your broadcast engineering info site, yeah?
There is. You go to that site, and there's a link to everything Geek Jedi. So you'll see the links to radio to our engineering message board, the virtual engineer, which is broadcastengineering.info.
We'll have that in the show notes, and actually that is. If you look at past show notes, there are links to Chris Tarr's sites, And also to Tom Ray Sots. And if you click on Chris Tobin, you know, his site is CBS Radio. So that's where you'll go. Hey, thanks again for joining us. And we'll hope to see you next week if the folks at the Twit Network let us back on. We'll see you then. Thanks for joining us for This Week in Radio Tech.
That's all the bandwidth we can pilfer this week. Another twit has propagated, and all the transmitters and audio equipment live happily ever after, thanks to the handsome engineer and his kind, benevolent care. We'll be back next week.
Lord willing, and the creek don't rise.
This Week in Radio Tech.
Subscribe to iTunes and you'll never miss a show.
Search for This Week in Radio Tech in the iTunes store.
Soliciting is strictly encouraged.
If you like today's show, tell a friend. If you didn't like it, we were never here.
Kirk Carnack's wardrobe provided by the Salvation Army and the Red Cross Disaster Relief Services. Hair and makeup provided by Penny Lopez Garcia Hernandez Weinberg.
He's unique, wouldn't you say?
I just want to get it over with.
This ends this transmission.
Tango, Whiskey, India, Romeo, Tango.
Signing off. Okay.